All right, good evening, everybody. This is a first in a two-part series. The next one will be the Monday before Yom Kippur. So we try to make it easy Monday, easy to remember. And tonight we're going to do Rosh Hashanah. Now, last year in this class, we looked at Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. We explored Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. So I don't want to do a repeat. We're going to do things a little differently today. The way we're going to look at things is through the lens of what the Chazan says, primarily in the Chazaras HaShatz of Shacharis and in the Chazaras HaShatz of Musaf. Okay, but just as by way of a brief introduction, so you see on the page that I gave you that there are four names of the holiday. One of them, the one that we refer to it as primarily, is Rosh Hashanah. It's also known as Yom Hadin, the Day of Judgment, Yom Teruah, and as is, well, actually, I don't want to give it away, and Yom HaZikaron. So Yom Teruah refers to the blowing of the shofar, and Yom HaZikaron means a day of remembrance. If you look on turn to page 452, okay, starting at 452, this is Musaf, the quiet Amida of the longest Shemoneh Esrei of the year, the Amida of Musaf, and starting at 452, we have the bulk, I would say, of the Musaf Amida. So each of the sections of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofaros ends with a bracha. So 452 is where it begins. But if you look on 458, how is the day referred to? Baruch Atah Hashem, Melech HaKol Haaretz, B'Kadesh Yisrael. V'yom HaZikaron, okay? Go to the end of the next bracha, okay, which is Zichronos. And, of course, the word Zecher is mentioned a lot with Zichronos. What's the bracha? Zocher HaBris, on page 462. Okay, so there's a remembrance. And at the end of Shofaros, Shamea Kol Truas Amo Yisrael Barachamim. So there's a reference to the concept of Trua. So if we had to take a vote, though, which concept is more prominent in our liturgy between these days? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Adin, Yom Truah, Yom HaZikaron? Anyway, Yom HaZikaron, right? That's the way we say with Kiddush, right? So when we think about the bracha, like Mikadesh HaShabbos, for example, so Lahavdil for Rosh Hashanah, it's Yom HaZikaron. So which one of these names of the holiday doesn't appear in Tanakh at all? Best of my knowledge. Rosh Hashanah, right? Rosh Hashanah, that's a Mishnaic terminology. There's a Maseches Rosh Hashanah, right? And the idea of it being the beginning of the year certainly doesn't have any legs to stand on in the story in the book of Nehemiah that I mentioned on Shabbos in the afternoon class. But beyond that, when's Rosh Hashanah? What month of the year? It's the seventh month. It's the seventh month. So to make that kind of focus is, I think, less important in the Tanakh. Whenever Rosh Hashanah is referred to, it's referred to as the seventh month, the beginning of the seventh month, the first day of the seventh month. So certainly in the Torah, when it tells us about how it's a Mikra Kodesh, it's a time of Karbanos, etc., that's the way it's referred to. But beyond that, the Yom HaZikaron is really what this day is about. Of course, there's the shofar, there's Yom Teruah, and that is important. That's significant. That's the mitzvah of the day. But I think that it's important to focus a little bit on the idea of Zikaron and what is the Zikaron all about. So beyond the Zichron Teruah, and that's the first pasuk which I think I gave you, is that Rabbi Israel Mor Bachodesh Hashvi'i Bechad Lachodesh Yelachem Shabbason Zichron Teruah Mikra Kodesh. So to remember the Teruah. Okay, but you know, anybody who knows a little bit of halacha knows that the idea of zichron truah, the idea of remembering the truah, is what we do when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Because we don't blow the shofar, so we talk about the shofar, and that's what Jews do, right? We talk about the shofar. But beyond that, the concept of zichron truah is not what Yom HaZikaron is about. What's Yom HaZikaron about? What is Yom HaZikaron about? When we talk about Rosh Hashanah, we refer to it as Yom HaZikaron. So we need to understand what the Zikaron is in fact about. So I mentioned at the outset we're going to be looking at the things that Chazan says through in today's class, and I think the most prominent thing that the Chazan says on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as well is on page 444. Okay, anybody want to guess what that is? If you don't know what it is already, no. That's we all say that. What does the Chazan say? Hineni ha'ani mimas. Okay. So I remember when I was in yeshiva in Israel. So it was the first time that I remember. Well, it wasn't the first time I was in Israel for Rosh Hashanah, but it was the first time that I remember Israel and Rosh Hashanah. And I remember getting all excited for Hineni. Of course, I was in yeshiva, so yeshiva davening is very different than it is in a shul. But nevertheless, I discovered that in Israeli culture, the Hineni is not a big deal. Right? The Chazan does it like under his breath. He skips half it, or at least we don't hear it. He says it all under his breath. Whereas in America, or probably anywhere in the diaspora, Hineni is, you know, that's where the Chazan struts his stuff, right? I mean, that's a big deal. So you know, I mean, it's you know, there's a joke about Hineni, you know, where the Chazan gets up and he says, "Oh, Hineni, ani mimas," and the rabbi gets into it and he says, "Oh, Hineni, ani mimas, I'm a pauper of deeds. I too, I'm not worthy of being up here." And then the gabbai gets up and he says, "Hineni, ani mimas." And then the president of the shul gets up and says, "Hineni, ani mimas." And the rabbi hits the gabbai and says, "Look who thinks he's a pauper of deeds, the president." Okay, so that's the. I could say the president's not here, but it doesn't apply in our shul. But anyway, but what's the Baal Tefillah doing? Read through it. Look at what he's saying. "Here I am, impoverished of deeds, trembling and frightened from the dread of him who's enthroned upon the praise of Israel. I've come to stand and supplicate before you, for your people Israel have sent me, although I am unworthy and I am unqualified to do so. And so I'm asking you, you God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you're compassionate, you're gracious, you're frightening, you're awesome. Grant success to the way upon which I go, standing to plead for mercy upon myself and upon those who sent me. Don't hold them to blame for my sins. Don't find them guilty for my iniquities, for I am a careless and willful sinner. Let them not feel humiliated by my willful sins, and let them not be ashamed of me, and let me not be ashamed of them." And the Chazan, who is very in tune with what he's actually saying, picks and selects which parts he's going to say under his breath, and which parts he's going to say out loud, and of course makes it into a big deal. Now, I don't know, I've done this once. Only one time in my life did I daven Musaf. It's a frightening tefillah to say. It really is. It's extremely humbling to the Baal Tefillah who is taking the davening seriously and isn't all about himself. Okay, and hopefully no Baal Tefillah is all about himself, but it's a very humbling tefillah to realize I don't belong here. I don't belong here. They've asked me. I don't belong here. So what is the Hineni? It's really an equalizer. It's saying, look, I know I don't belong here. They know I don't belong here. None of us belong here. But it's Rosh Hashanah, and it's Yom Kippur. So we got to do it. And so they sent me. So please don't pay attention to what's going on and not the people involved. And hopefully after you pay attention to what's going on, God, You'll grant forgiveness and atonement to all the people who are here. We're all in this together. Now, lest you think that this is reserved for Musaf alone, so you have to realize that the Baal Tefillah for Shacharis does this as well. Okay? Take a look. Turn to page 306. Okay? Now, what? What, the Hineni? Because we are representing ourselves and we know who we are. Okay, this is a person who's a Shaliach Tzibur. And the Shaliach Tzibur says, look, I'm happy to be in the corner. I don't want to be here. I want to be, you know, doing my own thing. We don't need to tell God we're not worthy. We know that. He knows that. But this is the person who's representing us. So we need to have disclaimers for that individual. Go ahead and take a look. Take a look at the opening, not the opening paragraph, the opening paragraph we're familiar with. That's the first bracha, or at least the beginning. We have Yisod Chachamim, based on the tradition of our wise and discerning teachers, and the teaching derived from the knowledge of the discerning. I open my mouth in prayer. That's basically the idea of what he's saying in a slightly different format. And then read through Yoresi. I am frightened as I open my mouth to bring forth words of prayer, as I rise to pray before the awesome dreaded one. What is this? Hineni ani mimas. It's the exact same thing. I'm short of deeds, and therefore I fear. I lack understanding. How can I help? My Creator, make me understand how to inherit the legacy of Torah. Give me strength and courage against faint-heartedness and fear. May my prayer be as favorable as spices of incense. Right? In Hinnity, he says, look at me like a zaken v'ragil, somebody who is just, you know, elderly person who's already past the taiva time of his life, a desire for sin. Okay? And then, as you read through it, you can turn the page, you'll see, and the art scroll does this actually very nicely for us, every time that there's something, almost every time I should say, when there's something in brackets, there's a name. Okay? There's a name. What's the first name that's mentioned? It's on the top page 308. Moshe Rabbeinu. And what's Moshe Rabbeinu? Look at the line. Like your promise to Moshe in the cleft of a rock. What's the promise to Moshe in the cleft of a rock? So I gave it to you on the sheet. Do you take a look? Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33 in the Torah. Moshe says to God, and this is after the golden calf, Hareini Nas Kodecha. Right, show me your honor. Show me your glory. And God says to him, Ani Avir Kol Tuvi Apanecha, V'Karasi B'Shem Hashem L'Panecha, V'Chanosiyas Asher Achom, V'Chamtiyas Asher Achim. Right, Moshe is saying, I'm as close to you as I could possibly be. The people of Israel have done what they've done, but I have come and pleaded on their behalf, and you have said that you're not going to destroy them. That's what you said. You decided, right, V'Yichal, Moshe, Espanei Hashem L'Kab, we read it on the fast day, you're not going to destroy them. So, what does that mean? That means that Moshe's petition has been successful. Moshe has humbled himself in the way that only Moshe could, and God says, I got it. Moshe says, now, I feel so close to you, I want to be as close as possible. And what does that mean? I want to see whatever it means to see you, God. I want to see you. And God says, you know, there's only so much I can do because pasachav lo suchal rosas panai kilo yirani adam v'chai. You can't see my face, my front, whatever that means. I can't even imagine what it was that Moshe was hoping to see, and I can't imagine what it was that Moshe did see. And God says to him, hinei makom iti, this place with me. We need savtel etzur. You're going to stand at the rock. And when my glory passes by, and I'm going to put you in the cleft of the rock, and I'm going to put my palm over your face until I pass by. And then as I'm passing by, right, imagine, here's Moshe, here's God's palm, whatever that means, okay? So Moshe's here, and God's palm blocks Moshe, and then God keeps going, and the palm disappears, and all that Moshe can see is achorai, whatever that means. Okay, I'm going to block your vision until I pass by. Then I'm going to remove my palm. You'll see my back. You're not going to see my front. Okay, whatever that means. But the point is that Moshe is as close to God as you can possibly get. You can't see me and live. But here's Moshe achieving atonement for the people, and that's the image which the Chazan is invoking. I want to be like Moshe in that spot. Hey, on behalf of the people, we want to be able to see your face, whatever that means. We want to see your kavod. We want to see your honor, your glory. So this is who we are. So why am I going at it from this perspective this year? Because we have to realize and recognize that what's going on in Chazaras Hashatz is on our behalf. This is not a time. You know, sometimes during Chazaras Hashatz, people, they have a book out, they're reading something else. Every one of us, when Chazaras Hashatz is going on, this is what we have to be doing. Follow along. Have the machzor in front of your nose. And if you understand the Hebrew, follow in the Hebrew. If you don't understand the Hebrew, you follow in the English. And you just got to be in tune with whatever's going on. This is not a show. This is full audience participation in whatever way that we can. And I'm going to prove it to you through everything that we... I mean, how much are we involved in Chazaras Hashatz? Yes, the Chazan says... This part, Yeresi Bivso, Yeresi Bivso, Si Siach Lashchil, Kumi Lechalos, Pneino Rav Yachil, and we're going, right? Okay, that's fine. But then, after this paragraph is over, then the ark is closed, congregation in Chazan. So we're involved, but we have to be following along the whole way. Look through the paragraph that we do say. Okay, what names do you see there? What names do you see? You see... What names? You see Abraham, you see Sarah, okay? You see Yitzchak, okay? So these are important names for us to recognize. Where is the there's a word here on this page? Remembrance. See if you can find it. I wrote it down, but I didn't put the
I didn't put the. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Okay. Where what line is it on?
The last line.
The last line. Yeah. Okay. There you go. There you go. That's the one I'm looking for. Okay. So it's the tough line. Actually, no. I wanted one that was higher up because. Oh yeah. No, it's the first line. Oschil yom pikuda. The dread of Remembrance Day has arrived. Now, what word would we imagine if Archibald's going to translate Remembrance? What word would if we started on the English and we saw Remembrance? What would we think is going to be on the Zikaron, Zikira, something like that? But that's not the word that's there. It's Pikuda, and like you pointed out at the very end, is also Nifkuda. That's a Remembrance word. The translation is correct, but what does that remind us of? Vashem Pakad Es Sarah. What's Vashem Pakad Es Sarah? It's the opening of the Kriyas HaTorah, the Torah reading on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Why? Why? Because Rosh Hashanah is the day when Sarah is considered to have been remembered. Now, what does that mean, that she was remembered, that God decided she was going to have a baby? Is that what it means? Is it that, if you actually do the math, our tradition has it that Yitzchak was born on Pesach. Okay, meaning Nisan times. How many months apart is Tishrei to Nisan? So in a non-leap year, it's 6. In a leap year, it's 7. No matter how you look at it, if Sarah becomes pregnant at Rosh Hashanah time, Yitzchak's being born a little early. Okay? Either 3 months early, or 2 months early, or 2.5, however you do the math, exactly how long pregnancy is. Okay, so there is another explanation that Sarah only realized she was pregnant at Rosh Hashanah time, which makes a lot of sense for a few reasons. Number one, she wasn't expecting to become pregnant. Number two, who knows if she actually menstruated anymore, right? The fact that she became pregnant is God doing inner workings anyway. So there's no way that she would know that she's... It's a possibility that there's no way that she knew that she was pregnant until she started the show, which would happen at the end of the first trimester. So there are ways that we can explain it. Sarah was remembered, she realized, etc. But the image is about Sarah being remembered. So yes, we're calling it Yom HaZikaron, but one of the main Zikarons is Sarah being remembered. Okay, and as we noted, Abraham, Yitzchak, they're also mentioned here. And if you keep going, you'll see that Rivka is also mentioned here. Okay, if you go on 3:10 and 3:12, what other names are there? Anybody, you can guess, but you don't have to guess. Yaakov is mentioned there. Chana is mentioned. Look at the top of page 3:12 and 3:13. Yitzchak, Rivka. Okay, where did you see Chana? I remember she's there, right, in the middle. Line Lamed on page 3:10, 3:11. Okay, that's where you see Chana. These women, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Chana, they were all barren. They all appear in the Torah reading, in the half Torahs over Rosh Hashanah. Sarah is day one. Rivka is at the end of the Akedah. She's mentioned. Okay, because after the Akedah, we're told about Rivka's birth. We're not told her story of infertility, but we're told about her. She is mentioned. And Chana, of course, is the tale of the Haftarah of the first day. And Rachel, Mevaka, Abonea, Rachel crying over her children, that's mentioned in the Haftarah of the second day. They were all barren. They all needed tefillah to help them. All, certainly, our tradition is it not so much Rivka. We'll get back to Rivka shortly. But Rachel, Sarah, and Chana, our tradition has it that they were all remembered Nifkadu on Rosh Hashanah. Whatever that means in their own different way, and each in their own circumstance. Just think about what their experience is. Okay, what does Sarah represent for the Jewish people? Our entire existence. Without Sarah, there's no Yitzchak. Without Yitzchak, family's over. It ends. What about Rachel? Rachel Vaka Abanel. Without Rachel, is there no Am Yisrael? No, you can't make that argument. Without Rachel, you don't have two tribes. Yosef and Binyamin. Yosef, of course, ends up becoming another tribe. Okay. Who came from Yosef? Who's from Ephraim? Yehoshua. Okay, Yehoshua is a pretty significant person in the scheme of things. The first king of Israel, Shaul, comes from Binyamin. Okay, so Rachel is not insignificant by any stretch of the imagination. Pretty important. But more than that, it's Rachel's story which impacts the way that Yaakov views his life and the way that the trajectory of how things go, especially after Rachel dies. Yosef's we could actually make the argument that without Yosef, the family dies. Okay, Yosef saves everybody in Mitzrayim.
So that's important. What about Chana? There's so much that we learn from Chana, but think about what Chana is. Shmuel, without Shmuel, who knows? Is there Malchus Yisrael? I don't know. Would there have been another Navi, another prophet who anointed Shaul, anointed David? Okay, I mean, you know, but Moshe B'Aaron B'Cho'anav, and who's equal to Moshe and Aaron? Shmuel, and who's Shmuel's mother? Chana. So we can't lose sight of the context of the role that each of these people play. Okay, and with respect to Rivka, we'll get to that in a couple minutes. But their relationship with God and the idea. I mean, just remember how does Rachel even come to become pregnant with Yosef? You remember that whole story with Reuven when he comes back with the flowers and he gives them to his mother, to Leah, and Rachel says, "Give me the flowers, and then you can have Yaakov for the night," and that's how Yisachar is created, and however whatever else follows. But the whole idea of Rachel, right? In other words, when Chazal look at that story, they say, "Well, what's wrong with Leah? Why was she bargaining over flowers?" And their answer is that Leah was actually trying to get her sister to daven better. When Rachel comes over to Yaakov and says, "Give me a child, and without it, I may as well be dead." So what does Yaakov say? Is it? "It's not you. It's not me. It's you." And what's he trying to say? We could say he's being cruel, but another viewpoint is that he's trying to inspire tefillah. I'm davening my heart out for you, Rachel. But you got to do it also. So this is what Chana equals tefillah. Rachel equals tefillah. What is Sarah? Also tefillah. I mean, just think about what did Sarah go through? Sarah was on page 318. On page 318, Sarah is mentioned again. Okay, what does it say? Hashem had remembered Sarah. V'chein v'Hashem pakad Sarah kasher amar. So too recall her offspring for good this day, a holy one. Read the first paragraph. Matriarch Sarah grew old righteously. Just when she despaired of giving birth, she finally became rejuvenated. He who drew her forth from the womb remembered her on Rosh Hashanah. She said, "I am judged this day. Behold, I am grieved. My youthfulness had ended." Right, what is Sarah? Right, we know her story. When did she give birth to Yitzhak? How old is she? 90. Which means that she basically gets pregnant maybe in her 89th year, 90th year, whatever it is. Okay, and however long the pregnancy is, fine. At what point in time did Sarah really despair and say, "You know what, I don't think it's ever going to happen for me"? How old was she? No, way before. When she gave Hagar to Abraham. Okay, at that time, Abraham was 85. Abraham was 86 when Yishmael is born. So, if Abraham's 85 at the time when Hagar is given to him, and we know they're 10 years apart, so Sarah's 75. So at 75, she says, "You know what? Ain't happening. It's not happening. It's not happening. But I'll hold off. I mean, as much as I'm going to make my hishtadlus so that Abraham can have a child, you know, maybe anything can happen." And that's what this is all about. Look at, right, and I think there's a very powerful message in this overemphasis on Sarah. Look at the end of the page, letter Tuf, Tefen Banatzarim. Take note of the righteous who were conceived this day, and the three barren ones who were remembered this day. Again, that's referring to Sarah, Chana, and Rachel. Be righteous for their righteousness' sake, O awesome one. So too recall our offspring for good this day, O Holy One. Okay? You know, there's a fascinating passage in Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer, and I gave it to you. And that is that that the shofar sound, you know, I'm sure many of us are familiar with the idea that the shofar sound is meant to be reflective of the cries of the mother of whom? Anyone know? The mother of Sisera, right? Sisera. Latiyabim Aim Sisera. Because the way that the shofar is described in Halacha is Yilul Yolil, Genuche Ganach, and the different ways of crying, which are reflected on the mother of Sisera, the way that Devorah describes her in the book of Shoftim, waiting for her son to come home. So that's very, I mean, it's very tragic, it's very sad for the mother of Sisera. Okay, between you and me, how much do we care about the mother of Sisera? We don't care about the mother of Sisera. Sorry, your son, I mean, you can imagine, like Lahavdil. Sisera was the Hitler of his day, okay? Do we care about Hitler's mother? Sorry, I don't care about Hitler's mother. I don't care about Sisera's mother. So why are we learning halacha from her? So the Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer says, that's not Ima de Sisera. It's Imasara. There's a typo. This midrash says that when Avram came back from Har Moriah, Chor Apav Shel Samael, the Satan got angry. Shirosh Alo Also Biyado Tavas Libo Levatel Karbanos Shel Avram. He had tried to stop Avram's carbon, but Avram went through it until a different malach stopped him. Maasas, what did he do? Samael is the Satan. Halach Biyamar Lasara. He went over to Sarah and he said, "Hey Sarah, Lo Shemata Mashnas Beolam. Hey, have you heard what's been going on?" Amar Lo Lab. She said, "No." Amar Lo. So the Satan says to her, "Lagach Yishech Asakem Lenar Yitzchak Rikrivoli Ola." Your old man husband took your son Yitzchak and slaughtered him, burnt him to a crisp. Vanar Bochem Yalel Shelo Yecholi Natzel, and the child was crying. And miyalel, a different form of crying, because he couldn't be saved. So what does Sarah do? Miyad eschila bocha miyalelis. So she started to cry. And she started to do her yalula yalil. Okay? Bachsa shalosh bechios keneged shalosh tekios. She cried three types of cries. Keneged, right opposite the three kinds of tekios. Shalosh yalalos keneged shalosh yivavos. Ufarcha nishmas of amesa. That's Sarah's the one who cried. Never heard that before. Okay? So here you go. So the way that we are blowing the shofar is Sarah. Okay. So what do we need here? We need to tap into our avos and imahos, our fathers and mothers, and that's what the davening focuses on. We're laying the table now. Why do we not talk about shofar yet? I mean, we'll talk a little bit about shofar, but we don't need to talk so much about shofar because what are we going to do? We're going to blow it. Okay, we don't need to talk so much about it. We're going to blow it. And that is, of course, significant. But we need to set the stage for what Yom HaZikaron is about. It's about remembering the shofar, of course. And if it's Shabbos, for sure. But it's about, God, you had these people, Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. You had Sarah Rivka Rachel Leah. You loved them. You put everything into them. You promised them the whole world. For whom? For us. So that we should be here one day. So that and here we are. So whatever you think about us, whatever you think about the way that we function, the way that we operate, the things that we do, the way we treat each other, maybe we're undeserving. And that's what the Chazan says. The Baal Tefila says, "I'm not deserving. I know they're not deserving. We all agree we're not deserving. Why are we here? Can you remember Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? That's why we're here. Remember Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. Remember Chana. Please, that's why we're here. That's what Yom HaZikaron is about." If you go to page 320, so you'll see that the tefillah has two options for us, based on whether it's a weekday or Shabbos. Now this year it's not a weekday, it's not Shabbos. I'm sorry, it is weekdays. So we're not going to be reading Shemom Mufarim on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. You turn to page 322, and you'll see, nevertheless, because we do read this on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, as we're going to see in a few minutes. But take a look at Zion through Tess on page 322, 323. When the sacred offering Yitzchak was found fitting in his eyes, Avram bound a ram as a substitute to offer before him after it had been caught in a thicket by its horns. God instructed Yitzchak's offspring to sound the shofar in this month. But if this day falls on the Holy Shabbos, a remembrance of the shofar blast, right? Zichron Shrua in this month. I'm sorry, remembrance of the shofar blast, a holy convocation. Its rule is that if it arrives on a weekday, you are to command that it be sounded throughout your boundary. It is a day of sounding the shofar, Yom Teruah Yihyeh Lachem. So, what is the image of the blowing of the shofar? So, if it's Shabbos, so we mentioned this on Shabbos, giving both options, just to see that I'm telling you the truth. Not that I think anybody here would imagine that I'm not telling you the truth, but what is it? Shemot Mefarim. This is on page, hold on a second, 3, no, on day 2, Shemot Mefarim, it was close to the beginning of the Chazaras HaShatz, yeah, page 354, you could just hold the page for a second and take a look at 354, you'll see that Shemot Mefarim, this whole section, is going to be said by us on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. It's the exact same prayer. Okay, so in other words, they copied and pasted from if the first day is Shabbos to the second day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. So we don't say it on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, when the first day of Rosh Hashanah is a weekday. So instead we say it on the second day, but we've already blown the shofar. So we're just acknowledging the fact that had Rosh Hashanah been on Shabbos, then we would have mentioned this, but we already blew the shofar, so we didn't have to mention it. Okay, so we don't have to make the Zichron Shruah. So that's, I wanted to just set the stage for the concept of Yom HaZikaron and what this is all about. Now there's another theme of Rosh Hashanah, and that is of declaring God king. Okay, I mean, we know this, Malchios, right? Declaring God king, Zichronos, the remembrances, and there are other remembrances, and they're mentioned in the Musaf, which I focused on last year, and I said I don't want to repeat so much. So, fine, and then we have Shofaros. But how else do we focus on God's kingship? Right, we change a bracha from Akel HaKadosh, we say HaMelech HaKadosh, that God is the Holy King. We say Avinu, Malkeinu, okay, this idea of God being our Father and our King. Look at, that's another theme which is brought out. But take a look at page 330. Now the prayer before, which I just skipped, which is really 328, is, it's all over this. Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch Yilam Va'ed. Hashem is king. Hashem reigned. He will reign forever. Look at the next tefillah. How does it begin? L'kel Arech Din. Don't skip what it says before it. What's right before it? Uvechein l'cha kol yachtiru. What does that mean? L'cha kol yachtiru. Everyone is going to crown you. What does it mean to crown you? When you crown somebody, they're your king. Okay, read through. Obviously, it's not in God's kingdom. So all this is further reflected in the section that we add before the bracha of HaMelech HaKadosh. It's about declaring God king. And that's on page 334. And those are the paragraphs of V'chein Tein Pachtecha, V'chein Tein Kavod Hashem Le'mecha, V'chein Tzadi Kinyir V'yismachu, V'simloch Ata Hashem Le'vadecha. Right? You will reign alone over all your works. We're setting up the stage for the bracha, which we're going to say, which is HaMelech HaKadosh. It's all about declaring God king. Now that's not unique to Chazaras Hashatz. We say that in our private Amida as well. Let's turn now to page 344. Okay, day two, the Chazaras Hashatz for the second day. Okay, look in the paragraph on the bottom after the Chazan again spills out the Shachris version of Hinani, which is it's a little different than the first day, but it's the same thing. You can read through the translation. You see he's saying, I don't deserve to be here, I shouldn't be here, but you know, what can we do? I gotta be here, and so this is what it is. And then we turn to the second paragraph, the part which we say together on the bottom of page 344. Again, look at the names, and what do you see? Avram and Sarah, again, remembering their unique relationship with Hashem. This is what Zikaron is all about. Turn to page 348, where we note, look at the top of the page. Together, father and son went to Mount Moriah to prepare an offering in observance of your commandment. Preserve their offspring by arousing your mercy. May the memory of your oath be like rising incense smoke. As you sit today to judge peoples, be filled with mercy on his offspring. Okay, so what are we doing? We're asking God to once again remember. Okay, what's the, is there a Zion on this page? Zecher Shvua Kiktoris L'smor. Zecher is a remembrance. Okay, that is what we are invoking, but what's the remembrance of? It's a remembrance of your promise to Abraham and to Yitzchak. The bottom of page 348, the next paragraph, which we say there, looking into 350, we're bringing in another theme of Rosh Hashanah, which is the shofar. We ask the shofar to herald our good judgment. If we didn't hear the shofar on day one because it was Shabbos, then we focus heavily on it through the portions of the prayers which say what you say on Sunday, because it's our one day to do so. Of course, if both days of Rosh Hashanah are chol, then the focus goes back to the passage which was omitted yesterday, which I pointed out before, which again is on page 354. And that basically rounds out the Chazaras Hashatz. And then, with the exception of La De'ad Yimloch Melech Elyon, which is again a prayer talking about God's being king, and that brings us more or less to Kedusha. Okay, so that's Shachris. Let's now turn our attention to Musaf. Okay, Musaf is a different animal simply because we've already begun to blow the shofar. If you turn to Misod, which is on page 470. Okay, you'll note that it's just that small paragraph, which is essentially the equivalent of Hashem's Fasai Tiftach, right? Eftecha pi b'sfila v'sach anunim. I'm going to open up my mouth with prayers and supplications, etc. But there, you don't have the entire thing that we saw in Shacharis. Why? Because we just had Hinani. Okay, the Chazan right before we all said Musaf, the Chazan did the Hinani and made a big deal about it. But we establish here, more than any of the Zikaron from before, that this is a day of Din. And that's what page 470 is about. That's the bottom of the page. And that's what these, take a look. We can read through this, but again, we're talking about Abraham. You see, if you look in the art scrolls brackets on the side, you see Abraham, you see Adam and Chava, you see Yosef, you see Yitzchak. Okay, take a look at the bottom of page 472. When you turn to the judgment throne, the foundation of your presence, when compassion and sternness come to your mind, O exalted one, may your ear be attentive to the shofar sounded by Israel's breath. What's the shofar supposed to do? It's supposed to be accompanying our. It's supposed to be, basically, we're supposed to be blasting the Yetzirah to kingdom come. That's part of it, on the one hand. And on the other hand, it's supposed to be reminding us, what are we here for? We're trying to get atonement. The sound of the shofar is, Hayitaka shofar b'ir v'amla yecharadu. Could it be that people will hear the shofar and they won't tremble? We're trembling. We are trembling before God. The shofar is helping us achieve that. So do you not see that, God? Of course you see that. So please, accept our tefillah, accept our shofar, accept our supplications, and grant us atonement. And all of this leads into the tefillah of tefillahs on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur, which is Unisane Tokef. You know, the only thing that I'm going to say about Unisane Tokef's authorship is that it's disputed. Art Scroll has a story about Rabbi Amnon, which contemporary scholars think is, whether it's a true story, I'm not going to argue it's a true story, but whether he wrote it, they don't believe that he wrote it. Okay, so that doesn't really matter in the scheme of things. It is a powerful tefillah, and it's been around for a long time, and it basically spells out our concerns for this day. In other words, once we've already talked about Zikaron, and once we've talked about Shofar, we don't really need to talk about Shofar so much, except that we have these three brachos of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofaros, but we've talked about it. What do we need to pay attention to now? The aspect of Rosh Hashanah that we don't talk about so much in terms of calling it, but it's the fact is that it is the Yom Hadin. It's the Day of Judgment. And that's what Unisane Tokef spells out for us. There is a chilling passage which leads up to the Barosh Hashanah Yikasevun. It really depends on where the Chazan chooses to start saying aloud. Although all of this is pretty chilling, but some contemporary music people have recorded their own melodies and nigunim to this, and they typically start from Uvashofar Gadol on page 482, or probably from Uvashofar Gadol, although it could start even earlier. So I want to read from there. Uvashofar Gadol, the great shofar, will be sounded, and a still thin sound will be heard. The Kol Dumama Daka, of course, is a reference to Eliyahu Hanavi's experience on Har Chorev, when he goes back running away from the Jewish people because from Achav, who put a price on his head, the king of Israel, who was not such a good guy. And Eliyahu's encounter with God is highlighted by this cold mamadaka, this still thin sound. And that image is a fascinating image because it showed Eliyahu that even in the silence, you can still sense and feel God's presence. Kol mamadaka yishama, malachim yechafezun, the angels will hasten, b'chilura ada yochezun, a trembling and terror will seize them, and they're going to say, you know what today is? Hinei yomadin. Badin. It's the day of judgment to muster the heavenly host for judgment. Because this is not, they're not being vindicated in your eyes in judgment, they're angels. Who is? That's a line from the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which describes what the day of Rosh Hashanah is about for people. Now what B'nai Maron is, some translated as sheep, there are other possibilities as well. I'm not clear what the sheep imagery is, because yes, a shepherd counts his sheep as they go past him, but a shepherd doesn't judge his sheep. A shepherd just, you know, counts them, and usually lovingly, or at least concernedly. So what is it? Does God, you know, have each person or their neshama or whatever go pass before him like sheep? Is that what it means? So what is that? So I'm not even going to try to begin to understand, because there would be too much talk aloud, and I'm not sure we're going to get to a conclusion. But that's the explanation is, Kivakaras roi adro mavir tzono tachas shivto, kain tavir v'sispor v'sim nevus v'kod nefesh kolchai. So the way at least that this tefillah explains it is not so much a judging, as much as like a shepherd inspecting his flock, making sheep pass under his staff, so shall you cause to pass, count, calculate, and consider the soul of all the living, and you shall apportion the fixed needs of all your creatures and inscribe their verdict. Okay, now that's not so depressing. Really depends on what tune the, you know, I mean, it's a reasonable request or instruction, kaviyachol, if we can instruct God. What's chilling is what comes afterwards. Rosh Hashanah yikaseivun, uviyom tzom kippur yechaseimun. So what I gave you on the back of the page is something which I actually put as in the front of the Yizkor book 2 years ago. It was written by a fellow who I know, and I gave you his name, Michael Feldstein, lives in Stamford, Connecticut. Just somebody who I know and like very much. And he posted that year on Facebook about his experiences about Tfilah for the High Holidays, what that has and how it had evolved, in particular with reference to the recitation of the Unasana Tokef, and this paragraph, this Rosh Hashanah paragraph in particular. And he shared, and I'll just read what I gave you, just so you can read along. He shared the earlier, admittedly naive, understanding he attached to the prayer. Quote, when I was much younger and I just started leading the Yom Nirayim services, it actually was very difficult for me to relate to this part of the prayer. After all, who today dies of starvation or by drowning or by fire? In trying to understand and appreciate the prayer, I attempted to look at the words more metaphorically. Who shall be tormented by the fire of ambition? Who shall hunger for companionship? Who shall thirst for approval? Who shall be strangled by insecurity? Who shall be plagued by the pressures of conformity? It made more sense to me that way, as it broadened the scope of the potential universe. But now, this is my little comment, being in tune to the world as he is now, and a particular follower of Jewish news, his later reflection is to turn back down the tragic memory lane of previous years. And he wrote, each year someone else unfortunately seems to come to mind. A few years ago when I read the words, who by fire, and you know, we can certainly, today, Chaf Gimel Elul, is the yard site of 9/11. Okay, so we can throw that one in there too. But he said, but on a more individual level, I thought of Rabbi and Mrs. Rubenstein of the Young Israel of Scarsdale, who had lost their lives in a tragic fire right before Pesach. I think it was actually Shabbos HaGadol when that happened. When I read the words, who by the sword, at the height of the terrorist attacks 15 years ago, I thought of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl, who was beheaded in Pakistan. More recently, when I read the words, who by choking, I thought of a 2.5-year-old baby, the grandchild of friends of ours, who lost his life when he choked on a grape. Who by plague, the Zika virus comes to mind. Several years ago, when I read the words, who by water, I thought of those who perished in the tsunami. A few years later, I remember those who lost their lives in Hurricane Katrina. And this year, of course, this is 2 years ago, I will inevitably think of those who died in the Houston floods. Okay, and each of us, every year, when we look at this and we consider the words, there is a person who is actually paying attention. There is no way that a person cannot be moved by this, because we all know somebody who fits into this. Just mi yichyeh mi yamus, right? Who will live and who will die? Right? We all know people who have died. Mi v'kitzo umi lo v'kitzo. Who in their time and who not in their time. Somebody I grew up with just Thursday passed away, 41 years old.
Well, what do we know about whose time it is?
Correct. What do we know? Exactly. But I think that it's a measure of our own perception. Right? We look at somebody and say, right? If somebody dies in their late 90s or 100, we don't say, oh, so young. we don't usually say that. Okay, we say Baruch Hashem lived a full life, you know, amazing, incredible. Sometimes the person was ill for a while. It happens as well. Somebody has, you know, lo aleinu, Alzheimer's, dementia, something like that. And so we say, oh, you know, the suffering and whatever. But the point is, it's our perception. Okay, if somebody passes away, and even if they're 70 years young, we say, oh, too young, too early. That's the way we did it, because people, thank God, they live longer today than once upon a time. Miva kitza mila, miva mayim, miva esh. Okay, I mean, there's a rabbi this summer who drowned. Miva esh, it happens all the time. Miva cherev, what is a sword? Yeah, you can think about Daniel Pearl, but there's so many ways to die by cherev today. A sword doesn't only have to mean a beheading. Any terrorist attack is by cherev. You have knife attacks, you have stabbings, I mean, it's just crazy. Miva chaya, who by animal, I mean, this, again, I don't need to explain, we all know. Miva rav, miva tzama, with hunger or with thirst. Miva rash, miva magefa, who by storm, right? What is that? A storm. There was a storm in the Bahamas. Baruch Hashem, we were spared down here, but people died. And just in Houston, there was a storm as well. A tropical storm. Tropical storm, right? What's the big deal? Just some wind, a little bit of rain. No, a few people died. Miva chanika, choking. What does choking mean? Different ways to die with asphyxiation, etc. Miva skila, stoning. And those are the different ways that it says who will die. And beyond that, other kinds of din, which will come. Miyanuach, umiyanuach, who will live in harmony, who will be harried. Miyishakek, miyitarev, who will enjoy tranquility, who will suffer. Miyishalev, umiyishyasar. I'm sorry, I'm reading the translations wrong. Who's going to rest, who will wander, who will live in harmony, who will be harried, who will enjoy tranquility, and who will suffer. That's miyishalev, miyishyasar. Miyani, umiyasher, who will be impoverished, and who will be enriched. Mi shafel, mi arum, who will be degraded and who will be exalted. Now, those last few parallel options are, it's just the story of humanity. It's the story of people. People have ups and they have downs. And what we're essentially saying, and that's the line which we repeat over and over again, and the melody which we use, is Barosh Hashanah yikasevun, uviyom tzom kippur yechasemun. That it's written on Rosh Hashanah, and that's why we say Kasiva v'chasima tova. But the chasima tova we're hoping for on Yom Kippur, or however you understand it, with Hoshana Rabbah or Shmi Atzeres, and when Nidon and Alamayim, when we're judged for water, and the Tfilas Geshem, which we say, and the Chazan wears a kittel, and all of those things combined, that is what the Tfila references in its own way when we say Rosh Hashanah yikasevun v'yom tzom kippur yechasemun. And what's the answer? What's the solution? It's the line at the bottom of the page. Utshuva, utfila, utzdaka, mavir nesra agzera. And this is not just meant to be lip service. Tshuva, tfila, and tzedaka, they remove the evil of the decree. And what's the definition of tshuva and tfila and tzedaka? It's in little letters right above. Tzom, fasting, kol, voice, which is tfila, and tzedaka means money, being generous, sharing with others, giving to others, etc. The concept of tzom, fasting, being a source of atonement and kapara, and is something which we've been talking about reading the Orchot Tzadikim here in Shul between Mincha Maariv, because he says it a lot, that there are a lot of kinds of deeds that a person can do, and the way you achieve atonement, the way you get kapara, is through taking upon oneself fasts. And he says everybody should do it in whatever degree that they can. From delaying breakfast, let's say, on any typical day, to even taking several days of a week, to Monday and Thursday, for example, or to do a personal bahab, or to fast even longer periods, eating at night, of course, but just taking that upon oneself to do that, because fasting is a purge. It's a way of saying, why am I fasting? Because I did something which I regret. And if I can fast, then God will see that I'm causing myself to suffer. I'm giving myself the Yisurin, and the way I'm giving myself the Yisurin, now God won't give me Yisurin. That's a point from fasting. But it's also to remind myself, why am I fasting? Because I did something wrong. If I don't want to be fasting, then I shouldn't do something wrong. That's something which is important to bear in mind. And of course, that's a significant form of tshuva. So when we look at this, and of course, right after this, what do? The Tefillah brings us straight to Kedusha, and after Kedusha, you have Malchios, Achronos, and Shofaros, which was last year's class. So what I wanted to present to you tonight was to show you that the days of Rosh, the names of Rosh Hashanah, Zikaron, Trua, and Din, are referenced for us very clearly in the Chazaras Hashatz, and it's done in a way that we need to recognize and realize what the Zikaron is. Zikaron, and there are different ways of understanding Zikaron. You can go through the Pesukim in Zikronos to see, for example, different things which are mentioned. Noach is mentioned, for example. But it's really the Avos and the Imahos, and we need to remember that we are their children. And if we are their children, we're saying to God, remember them. I mean, if you remember them, remember the way you loved them, remember the way you looked out for them, remember the way you answered their tefillah on Rosh Hashanah by giving a child to Sarah, and by giving a child to Rachel, and giving a child to Hannah. Remember us. Maybe some people are asking for a child, maybe some people are asking for something else. But whatever it is, remember. Remember us. And it's our recognition of understanding of what the shofar is supposed to mean for us today, that it's supposed to carry our tefillos and pierce the heavens, and that we also recognize that God is Melech, that God is the King. And we have it throughout the davening, Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach. But in the end of the day, what's a king's job? I mean, a king has a few jobs, but a king ultimately is the ultimate shofet. He's the ultimate judge, and that is what, and that's why I think the Unasana Tokef, and most specifically Rosh Hashanah Yikaseh Yom Tzav Kippur Yechaseimun, plays such an essential role in our tefillah. By the way, next time we have the class pre Yom Kippur on Monday night, yeah, we'll touch on Unasana Tokef, but that's not the main thrust of the Yom Kippur tefillah. What's the main thrust of Yom Kippur tefillah? Avodas Yom, right, the Kohanim, Avodas Yom HaKippurim, what the Kohen Gadol would do when we reenact that and we re-envision that, that's a very different ballgame than that which we're experiencing on Rosh Hashanah. So I hope that when we come into Shul on Rosh Hashanah and we have the Machzor, we're following along the entire time, we're not engaging in idle conversations which just take away and distract from that which we're supposed to be doing, aside from the fact that during Musaf we're not supposed to be talking at all because we're in the middle of the mitzvah of shofar, and any talking is a hesech hadas, it's a distraction, and it breaks up the mitzvah for us. But mostly just to be in tune and to be on the page to see what's going on. There's a lot of thought that has been put into putting the machzor together and the tefillah which we have, and it's just our challenge to come in here and say, okay, how can I get the most out of this book and the words which have been given to me by others so that I can have a meaningful Yom HaDin, a meaningful Yom HaZikaron, a meaningful Rosh Hashanah, and a meaningful Yom Trua? How can all of that be true for me? The answer is follow the book and pay attention. We should never walk through a tefillah and say, oh, yeah, I said it, but I didn't know what I said. And the Rosh Hashanah is a great day of reflection on that. Thank God the Baal Tefillah isn't rushing. And if he's not rushing, that gives us time to go back over all the things which we have read and said, and it gives us the opportunity that we need to understand it. And I hopefully, through understanding, we can find meaning, and the meaning should be what we need to get that Rosh Hashanah Yikasevun for good. We should all be inscribed for a good year.